What is up, everybody? Welcome to another Tuesday night edition of PGA Grinders Live After Dark. And guess what? We've got another major this week. It feels like one just ended, which it pretty much did about 10 days ago. And here we are for yet another major, thanks to the Olympics, the schedule crunched together this year. And we've got the PGA Championship in July. So right back to the grind. And I think a lot of these guys might be getting a little bit mentally exhausted, and they throw the Olympics on top of that in a few weeks, and it's really been a compact summer schedule here, but we are no weaker for the wear, and therefore back with you for another big week of Daily Fantasy Golf. I, of course, am Justin Van Zuiden, Daily Fantasy handle STLCardinals84. Alongside me, as usual, Gib Pollard, who just is coming off a fun, exciting weekend. That Gib, you got to give us a little bit of history about your weekend there last week.
So you know, I work at Eastern Oregon University. I am the director of the football broadcasts, and it's a little NAIA. I can't say it too fast because I always mess it out. It doesn't roll off the tongue like NCAA, but it's NAIA, Division II university. I direct the broadcast for football. We have three camera people. I'm the director. And so, I just threw a couple of emails out to a couple of universities in the area, in the state. And U of O, out of all of the universities that I emailed, three really small NAIA universities and one massive program in U of O. And the only person who got back to me was U of O. 5 minutes later saying, would love to have you here on campus and show you what we do. And so, yada, yada, yada. They had the ICC Cup, which was Inter Milan versus Paris Saint-Germain. He's like, yeah, we've got this broadcast going. Hey, would love for you to come in and check out what we do. And I was like, oh, boy, I'm in on that. So I drove out to Eugene, big trip for me, and sat back and watched what U of O does, and it was just thoroughly impressive. And, they're letting me know that, hey, when ESPN comes to town, because ESPN did the broadcast, it was on ESPN, and when they come in, they have no qualms in using U of O's equipment, you know, to do broadcasts if they have to. It was that state of the art, and it was just awesome.
So was that game at Autzen Stadium? Or
yes, it was. They actually put sod down for it. First time in three decades has been sod at Autzen Stadium, and that was for a soccer game.
Well, that's interesting. I guess I knew that kind of, but I didn't put that together that that soccer match was played there at University of Oregon. So very interesting.
Yeah.
Brian, what was your weekend like?
It was my birthday on Sunday, so I golfed a bunch. Went to the Rockies game on Saturday, had a nice time with some friends down the hill, and golfed some more yesterday. It's been a lovely weekend.
If I was a singer, I'd sing you happy birthday right now. I'd be late, but I can't hold a note.
And the five viewers that are tuned in live just went down to four, and then everyone that watches it later will quickly fast forward through the next couple of minutes.
So we're all glad Gib is not a singer. That's why he's a sound guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, we took our little ones up to Wisconsin Dells for the weekend and had a nice time up there at some water parks, and the little rascals enjoyed themselves very much. So everyone had a little bit of fun last weekend. And now back to the golf. PGA Championship at Little Baltusrol. I am not going to pronounce that right the whole show. They're in New Jersey. There's been, I believe, seven U.S. Opens contested on this course. One PGA Championship back in 2005. And so this is a difficult course. The winning score back in 2005 was Phil Mickelson at just 4 under par. You're not going to see a birdie fest this week like a lot of the PGA Tour events. You're not even going to see as many birdies most likely as what we saw at the Open Championship a couple weeks back. It's just a very difficult course. So keep that in mind this week. There might be a higher weight placed on the finishing positions for the golfers this week, assuming lower fantasy scores. So, Gib, what's sticking out to you as far as this venue and what we can expect this week?
I'm liking pretty much tee to green sort of statistics here. It's pretty hard. I think in 2005, it was the sixth hardest course on tour to hit greens in regulation. So it's just going to be, and that was when you had a bit of weather come through beforehand. And by a bit, I think it was a lot actually. So it could be pretty hard to hit greens this week. So I'm looking at potentially, you know, tee to green play.
Yeah, I think that's it's interesting because there are so many long par fours on this course that would tend to favor distance, but yet with some difficult rough and out of bounds and playing a lot of holes, then that tends to favor accuracy. So all in all, total driving, I think, is a stat that I'm looking at pretty big this week. And, you know, guys, like you said, that can get a tee to green on an efficient basis, hit these greens in regulation, and par is going to be a good score this week. So, Brian, what's sticking out to you with Baltusrol Country Club here?
Well, this course is really, really long. It's going to be over 7,400 yards every day, and it's just a par 70. You know, the first par 5 they're going to see is the 17th hole, and it's like 650 yards long. John Daly got there in 2 with like a 380-yard tee shot and then a 280-yard 3-iron, but it's really, really hard to score on that hole. So I'm kind of excited that everybody's targeting more of this total driving thing and people are talking about accuracy. Like, yes, there's a lot of rough on this course. The fairways are pretty narrow, and the rough is going to be cut to 5 inches thick. So you're not going to be wanting to be missing the fairways at all. But to win a golf tournament, you're not going to want to be missing the fairways anyways. So, like, there's such an advantage to distance here. Like, even on the short par fours, being able to bomb at 300 yards is going to allow these guys to clear these fairway bunkers and actually have a little bit more room to miss in some of these spots. So I'm very heavy on driving distance on this course. And most of the guys that I'm going to be targeting are going to be bombers who gain strokes. I'm looking at tee to green, approach to the green, and around the green also. And I'm going to hope I can find a bomber that's under-owned, gets lucky, hits more fairways than he should, and just put up a big score on, or just have an opportunity to score on these, on this really tough course.
The weather looks pretty benign as of now, especially as far as the winds go. I don't think I saw winds over 10 miles an hour any of the 4 days. A chance of rain, I think, maybe on Friday and perhaps one of the days on the weekend. But it doesn't look like weather is going to be a huge, huge factor this week, which is fine. Last week was a little hairy with the weather forecast, and that it looked like the Thursday p.m., Friday AM wave was going to have a huge advantage, and they did on Thursday, but then Friday the forecast kind of flipped and it kind of equalized the waves out a little bit. And of course at the British Open, we saw one wave have a pretty distinct advantage over the other. So it'll be nice to have a tournament where maybe weather, it doesn't play as big of a role in a team you want to build. Gibb, is there anything else kind of about the course that you want to point out before we start digging into these guys?
Well, one thing I've noticed is the wind direction. On the Thursday afternoon, just like most courses, the wind sort of picks up in the afternoon, it feels like. I'm just going to get your opinion before I go on, like both of your opinions. Don't you feel like that's the case, that most of the time the wind's picking up in the afternoon for most tournaments?
That's generally the pattern. Yeah.
Well, the wind direction for Thursday is sort of going downwind for the back nine, which is sort of the easier of the two nines. Like the two par fives are on that back nine, so it's sort of in the direction of downwind. Whereas on the Friday, it's going upwind for the other players. So I'm sort of looking at maybe some of the people who are teeing off maybe on the 10th tee on the Thursday morning just so they can catch the tail end of downwind on the Friday afternoon or Friday morning. Yeah, Friday afternoon, sorry. Yeah.
That seems like a little – I'll be totally honest. That seems like overanalysis on my part because I don't think the wind's going to be strong enough to make that big of a factor this week.
Yeah, and slight edge. That's
slight, very slight.
Yeah, very slight. But yeah, just looking at directions, that's all.
Yeah, I don't mean to poo-poo that statement. That's a valid. We saw at the British Open with some of those par fives when they played downwind. I mean, guys were reaching them in two with a seven iron, and you know, the days that they were playing into the wind, it was a three shot hole for almost everybody. So the wind direction definitely can have an impact, especially if the winds are stronger. Again, that's not really looking like it's going to be the case this week. So pretty weather neutral, at least on my end, as I've built some early lineups. As far as just some housekeeping items, guys that have withdrawn in recent weeks, Brooks Koepka and Daniel Berger are both still in the field for this week. Charles Howell III, our friend Chill, has withdrawn from the tournament, so he will not be playing, so make sure he's out of your lineups. As far as I know, that wasn't out until maybe today. I don't know. I just happened to see it today. Maybe it's been out for a while. Brian, how are you kind of approaching the high end of Jason Day, Dustin Johnson, Rory, and Jordan Spieth this week?
Well, Dustin looks so good, and he's in such hot form with six straight top tens, including two wins. Me targeting bombers has me all over Dustin. He's the highest rated guy in my model by a pretty large margin, which has me in this conundrum because I typically like to fade the most popular guy, and I think that it's pretty obvious that Dustin is going to be the chalk this week. I think we're going to see his ownership somewhere in the 25 to 30% range, and I'm just not sure what to do about that. What do you guys think?
Well, I do think he will be popular. I mean, you look at his form, which has been ridiculous over the last couple of months. The one thing that worries me is, you know, he's been playing so much golf. He went from the Open and then played in Canada last week, and now obviously playing this event. And he's played a ton of golf over the last 6 to 8 weeks. Now, obviously, these guys prepare for the schedule, and they know their body better than anyone. But and that's probably just me grasping for a reason to possibly fade him, because everything. If he's on his game and the way he's putting now, I mean, that used to be the equalizer. You could catch up to Dustin because he couldn't make a putt. Now that he's figured out his putting, and obviously the distance is there, he had probably five or six occasions last week where he was hitting a nine iron or a wedge for his second shot into a par five, because the par fives were so short last week, and he was, you know, driving at 360 on some of those downhill, 370 on some of those downhill par fives, and had 150 in. He's really hard to fade right now because everything's come together. So I'm in the same spot as you. I think he's a great play, but he's going to be highly owned. What do you think, Gib?
Just because he's highly owned doesn't mean you should fade him. Fade somewhere else. I wrote him up last week, and I wrote him up again this week. When a player is hot, he's hot, and there's no point fading him just because everyone else is going to be on him. Fade someone else. Plain and simple. I think it's hard to go wrong with, what, six straight top tens now?
Something a like lot.
That? Yeah. So, I mean, if you think he's going to bomb completely, then fade him. But if you think he's going to do great, then obviously don't.
I want to fade him, and I want him to bomb completely. I just don't think that's going to happen.
Well, you're being a negative Nancy there, mate.
I drool over the thought of a guy being 40% owned and missing the cut that I don't have any exposure to, but it's just so risky to fade him. It's like, that's the conundrum that we find ourselves in.
Yeah, I'm not worried about fatigue from Dustin at all. A couple months ago, he played his third straight tournament after taking a week off, and he won the damn thing. He's a bronze god with a supermodel of a girlfriend that is just surging with grade one genes. So he's first in par four scoring. He's second in driving distance. He's second in strokes gained tee to green. He's 11th in strokes gained approach. The only weakness he has for this course is in the 200 to 225 yard range. He's 120th there. And all four of the par threes fall into that range this week.
There you go. There's the reasoning. There's the merit to fade him. But he's a pretty strong play. I can't pull the 100% fade. I want to, but just I can't do it. The logic wins out in the end with that one. Gib, if you're not on Dustin, it sounds like you are, but if you're not, who do you like best of the other top-end guys?
Probably Rory, probably because he would probably be less owned than Day. Spieth, will be even, I think, lesser owned than Rory, but not by much. And Stenson, has Stenson even been able to finish his first drink out of Claret Jug yet? I mean, it feels like just yesterday that he won the thing, and now he has to sort of be the defending major champion this season. So, I don't know. I like Stenson, and I like Rory, but I'm probably go with Rory because he came fifth last time. I'm just kidding.
She did there.
But yeah, I just like it. I think Rory sets up pretty well for this course too.
Yeah, obviously he can hit it a long way himself. And the good news is he's kind of started to overcome those Thursday blues that he's had. And for all the talk about Rory not having his kind of season, here are his last, you know, handful of events. 10th at the Masters, 4th, 12th, 1st, 4th, a cut at the U.S. Open, 3rd, 5th, and that's it. So 7 of his last 8 have been top 12s. The only non-top 12 finish since the Masters was the cut at the U.S. Open. So, granted, he's not been dominating the game and winning every tournament, but all told, his recent form isn't that much worse than Dustin's outside of his performance at the U.S. Open. So I like Rory this week as well. I think he's kind of my other pick there if you're looking for a top-end guy. Obviously, they all have their merits. But you kind of touched on an important point there, I think. With this being so close to the end of the British Open, Brian, are you worried at all about either a letdown factor for Stenson or perhaps Mickelson after losing that fine round on Sunday and that 17-under par score not being good enough? Are we worried about those two guys at all as far as the recent the fact that the British Open just ended less than 2 weeks ago?
Maybe, but I'm not sure how to turn that worry into a math problem, so there's never really any point worrying about things that I can't do anything about, in my opinion. Stenson did get a week off, so that's no big deal. I did love a Phil Mickelson interview about him today. The media asked him, so how are you feeling about, you know, that performance on Sunday? Are you bummed out at all? He's like, no, I'm not bummed out. I played absolutely great. The only way I could have actually had a chance that week is if I had bent Stenson putter.
That was nuts. I mean, Stenson was walking in 30 footers there at points during that final round.
He should have contacted Thomas Peters.
Mickelson's going to be fine. I think Stenson's going to be fine. Like maybe we can worry about Dustin, you know, withdrawing because he's been playing a lot lately. And he's definitely got some fucking in there. But I totally agree with you guys about Rory. Like, I think he's the clear number two option. He is the second best form golfer right behind Dustin. There's nobody in better form besides Rory. And his stats grade out actually better than Dustin. So I think a lot of people are going to gravitate towards Rory. I don't think he's going to be the sneaky option that everybody thinks he's going to be. So maybe my play this week, which is super rare for me, is just to eat the chalk at the top, and my fade is going to be Rory.
Yeah, I do agree that Rory will be somewhat popular because of there's been a lot of people talking about him this week, and you know, he's going to probably approach Dustin's ownership by the time all is said and done, I think. And this might actually be the week that Jason Day goes a little bit under owned, because Jason Day was upwards of 50% owned last week, and his Friday round soured a lot of people. He was up there on the leaderboard, but he played well on the weekend, ended up kind of backdooring a 14th place finish. But with so much love for Dustin and even Rory this week, I think it's Jason Day goes a little bit more overlooked than normal. Not that he's going to have a low ownership. All these guys will be relatively high, but just some food for thought there. So,
I think Day is going to be more than Rory this week. Just because he's the defending champion, and the people who just play casually, they're just going to say, oh, he's the defending champion. He's won so many times. It's hard to fade Jason Day. Yeah, I'm going to put Jason Day in. Just for the people who don't actually listen to people who are talking about him.
I'll put a cheeseburger that Rory's higher owned than Day in the Millionaire Maker.
Fine.
Besides, these are all in good fun anyhow.
Yeah, cheeseburger.
All right. Let's Gibb, I didn't get any pressing thoughts on Stenson or Phil there for you, Gibb?
I don't mind Stenson. You know, you sit there and you think, well, Phil, he came second in his last tournament. He's the defending champion at this course. But, I mean, if he gets wild with his driver, the first two holes are out of bounds left. I mean, we saw what happened to sort of Fowler and went out, you know, double OB on one hole. I mean, granted, the OB isn't as close as it was for the 11th hole there at the Open, but still. And then I think it's the 8th hole is OB, and sorry, the 7th, the 8th and the 9th hole are both OB left as well. So if he gets erratic off the tee, maybe. But I have small percentage on Phil, not a whole bunch. I haven't looked at how he does after running up after him, you know, a major, but because he's done it plenty of times. But I don't know. I'm just not
a little subtle jab there.
Yeah. So yeah, I'm not on Phil Hunt like that much. So I like Stenson far more.
All right, Brian, what are your thoughts kind of on that next tier down? We got five or six guys there in the 9K range.
I think Sergio Garcia is going to be very chalky, and for a pretty good reason. He's in excellent form coming off of three straight top fives.
Three straight fifth place finishes.
Yeah, fifth place finishes.
I wrote that up too.
Too bad he tees off in the afternoon on Thursday. He does well on Tillinghast courses, who is the architect here. Lots of top tens and big events over the years. And he comes up high statistically. I like Sergio a lot, but I think he's going to be really popular. I think I'm going to pivot to Adam Scott. I think he might fly a little bit under the radar this week. His form could be a little bit better, but it was just a few months ago that he was, you know, in the kind of Rory and Dustin form that we're talking about how we can't fade right now. So I think it'll be more popular in Rose, but I'm not really interested in Rose. He just doesn't come up very high on my model. So I'd rather go to Scott. I think the Mickelson-Stenson discussion is interesting. I think Mickelson's going to be pretty popular. Do you guys think that Stenson's going to be popular, unpopular? Like, he doesn't really come up well statistically for what I'm looking at, but I'm not looking at what other people are looking at. What do you guys think about Stenson's ownership?
It's all mental for me. Does he not care because he just won his first major in a long time? Like, not a long time, but ever. But a long time trying for his first major. Or will he go into beast mode? I've done this now. It's all good. Now I don't have to worry. Is he going to, you know, you've been saying all year, Henrik Stenson is just one putt away from winning a major. Well, I mean, he's putter fired up his last tournament, and will he keep that going? Same can be said about Adam Scott. He's always just one hot putter away from winning any tournament he goes into. So I like Scott as well. I think Henrik's tee to green game is far better than Phil's. So if we're talking about Phil versus Henrik, I'm still going to take Henrik.
As far as ownership, I was kind of surprised at how high Stenson was at the Open in terms of his ownership percentage. He was in like the 30s in a lot of tournaments, and I did not expect him to be that high. And obviously it worked out for everyone that did it. So those people are all going to be okay going back to the well. And remember, it's only been 9-10 days since that tournament ended. Plus all the media publicity, you know, that his huge performance got. I think his price jumped as well, about $1,500 or $1,000. So I think that will kind of neutralize what would have been the added ownership. And I think he'll kind of be around the same as where he was last time, maybe in the 20s. If I had a guess, I think he'll be a little bit more popular than Phil in terms of just projecting ownership.
I think Phil's going to be pretty popular too. So I'm off both of them. Give me Adam Scott.
What's wrong with Ricky Fowler?
I don't know because
I don't see anything wrong with
him. Really strong.
His recent form is terrible for a guy that's priced like him.
Well, take away the quad. He's probably top 15, maybe. I mean, I'm not going to work it out on the fly right now, but you take away that unfortunate hole where he hit it OB, bang, bang, done. I mean, he finished plus six for the Open Championship. Had he not quad that on the Saturday, we could be talking about Ricky Fowler with another top 10 finish. Back-to-back top 10 finishes. That's just the example.
But you can say that for a lot of guys that got an 8 or a 9 on that 11th hole. Well, he was the only one.
But, I mean, it's not like a 73 is that bad. I mean, it was 71 par, wasn't it? So he's two over on the last round. So, I mean, he was pretty much in contention when he put it OB, and that sort of took the wind out of his sails. So I don't mind it. I think he's a great GPP play because he has the ability to top five any tournament he plays in. It just, yeah, I won't put him in cash games, but for GPPs, I think people are going to be scared off him. So why not put him in a GPP lineup or two, because he's going to be low owned and he has the ability to go high or high on the leaderboard.
These are the guys that, because people will be on Sergio, obviously people will be on Scott. Mm-hmm. It's very easy to dip down to Matt Kuchar or Zach Johnson. These are the guys right here, Fowler, Bubba, Matsuyama. All three of them, for relatively speaking, for their pedigree, are in relatively poor form. And these are the three guys right here. If you can pick one of those three guys to maybe, you know, outperform their salary, Brian, this could be, you know, one of these three guys could be that guy that is 5% owned that helps somebody win a GPP this week.
Yeah, I like Bubba Watson in that range. I'm interested in Ricky because he comes up very highly in my statistical model. He's fifth in par four scoring, sixth in strokes gained tee to green, 10th in strokes gained around the green. And all the other stats I look at, he's better than tour average. But Bubba is strong also. And I just like Bubba's form a bit better. You know, Ricky finished 44th in a tournament that he was supposed to win about a month ago. And I had a 10th, but also a 44th again. So he's not in the best form. I do agree he's going to be very low owned. So if I'm playing Ricky, it's going to be in the millionaire maker only.
Yeah, I've got some Ricky in some tournament lineups just for that very reason. I think he's going to be pretty low owned this week. And you never know. I mean, if he plays how he can play, he can certainly contend come the weekend. So, Gib, any other thoughts from you kind of on that, those few guys there?
As much as like Hideki, it's really hard to sort of have any confidence in him considering his recent sort of performance. But all three of them, they can hit the ball far. And so it's meant to be – I mean, when I got back from Eugene yesterday, I turned on to the Golf Channel, heard Frank Navarro say it's pretty dry there right now. There might be a storm coming through a bit later, but – overall, it's really dry. That's what I took away from his comments. If that's the case, then the distance might not factor in too much, because if there's a lot of roll on, you know, it sort of negates some of the distance. But all three of these guys, they can hit it, you know, 300 yards if they want to. So, yeah, I'd probably go Ricky, Bubba, and then Hideki if I was to rank the three of them.
What's ironic is, and this got a lot of play in the forums, despite Bubba Watson finishing 39th at the Open Championship, he was in the top like six or seven in fantasy point scoring because he made 17 birdies, he made an eagle, and basically the reason that he finished so low in the tournament is because he made 15 bogeys, a double, and a couple of others. So with the way DraftKings scores things, that birdies are worth 3 points, eagles are worth 8 points, and bogeys only lose you a half. Double bogeys are worse, only lose you one. Bubba ended up, you know, being a top fantasy scorer despite finishing 39th. Do either of you guys have any strong takes on that? Does it bother you that the scoring might not reflect the actual finish of a player in a tournament? I mean, this was kind of an outlier compared to what normally happens, but there's some people that were really up in arms about it. Brian, I'll start with you. Anything that bothers you about that, or are you okay with it?
I mean, it is what it is. It's kind of like when poker players were complaining about tournament structures. It's just like, whatever, shrug, adapt, you know, no big deal, man. I do prefer the old Victive, you know, stars draft scoring, where the score reflected your performance in the tournament rather than your number of birdies made. But you just have to adjust your models. And so instead of targeting, you know, par four scoring, target par four birdies or better. The problem is on this course, there's not going to be many birdies made. So I love that about Bubba, and that's part of why I like him the most in that trio, that he is so dynamic that he does score a lot of fantasy points. And if he does happen to be lucky and avoid some bogeys across the round, then he can go very low in the tournament. So that's my kind of GPP play, a guy that can bomb it, a guy that scores points like that. But I'm still wondering if this is the course for that kind of guy.
If we pivot down a little bit, Matt Kuchar's recent performance in non-major events, third, sixth, fourth, third, and ninth, that would be six consecutive top tens. And his performances in the last two majors, both T46. So I think a lot of people are going to go back to the Matt Kuchar bandwagon. He was 40% owned at the Open Championship. He rebounded last week with that ninth place finish. Pretty steady all four rounds. People like themselves some Matt Kuchar. He's still very affordable. Gib, is Kuchar just the cash game must play this week for you? Or, you know, do we put any stock into the fact that he's been struggling at the majors this year?
The cash game play for me is Charles Schwartzel. But I don't really see Matt Kuchar as a bad option. He's probably going to make the cut. And in a tournament where you're looking for as many points as you can, you want people making cuts. So, I mean, he's a great play. He's at a good price, but he's going to be highly owned. So, you know, like I said, if I'm taking the chalk in Dustin Johnson, I probably don't want to pair him up with Matt Kuchar because I think that's what a lot of people are going to be doing anyway. So I might try and pivot off Matt Kuchar and then just hope maybe he gets another 46 or maybe a 66 or something like that. And he doesn't really factor into the tournament too much. But, I do like it for a cash game play. I have no problems with that, Kuchar.
Devo, is this where you take your stand and say, if I'm going to play the chalk at the top, I fade Matt Kuchar here in the middle?
Yeah, and I get to do it with good reason this week, too. I will have no Matt Kuchar. I expect him to be very popular, especially at this price tag. There really isn't very good options around him. You know, people are not going to be wanting to take Hideki with this recent form, which has been bad. Nobody ever likes Zach Johnson. Ustase and Willett, Reed, just not very good options when you compare them to Matt Kuchar, his ridiculously excellent form. He's fifth in par four scoring. He's 12th in strokes gained tee to green. And he's 22nd in strokes gained putting. So this is all very good things for Kuchar. But I don't think he's going to win this tournament. He's 151st in driving distance, and I think that's going to really bring down his par four scoring. And he's 67th in the 200 to 225 range. So based on how popular he is, I think that the winner of this tournament is going to be a bomber. And so therefore, I'm going to fade Kuchar. And like I'm interested in Zach Johnson at 8.4K, but he's got the same problem as Kuchar. He's just a bunter, and his stats aren't nearly as good as Kuchar's are. But I think he's a much better leverage play based on their mutual ownerships.
I can get behind that. Gib, any thoughts from you on some of these high 8K guys? Obviously, those two guys are going to be two that attract some attention.
I don't mind Zach just as much as – I mean, I like Kuchar better than Zach, but give me no Ustasen. Give me no Danny Willett. I'll take Patrick Reed. I really will. He was something like – in cash games, I think he was 30% owned at the U.S. Open, and then he was slightly less for GPPs, and he burnt everyone by missing the cut. His last tournament was the Open Championship where he came 12th. So do we think that people who he burned at the U.S. Open are going to quickly go back to him for the PGA Championship? Or do you think they're just going to say, well, he burnt me in the U.S. Open, so I'm not going to go back to that? So I think maybe he might be lower owned than he should be. So I think that's one place where maybe you can pick up a little bit ownership on him as opposed to some of the other people, the other gamers out there.
Who are you talking about?
Patrick Reed.
I don't know. I mean, he always tends to draw his share of ownership. Never immense, but always – he's always kind of in that 15 to 20% range. I guess that's kind of where I expect him to be again.
He was a, say, for the $300 GPP, he was 11% owned.
At the US Open?
No, at the British Open. He was 19% for the US Open. In cash games for the US Open, he was 26%, and that dropped down to 11% for the British Open. So people obviously were burnt by him, and they didn't go back to being burnt again for the next major. So maybe he'll do well. And maybe he won't be as owned as much as maybe he should be.
I don't know. I really don't know where to peg Patrick Reed's ownership. I'll probably say it's probably in that mid-teens range. Kind of like, you know, him and Grace and Westwood. I mean, it starts to get hard to parse out this tier of guys. And obviously you'll see the ownership kind of spread out a little bit once we get here to Reed and Grace. And people talk about, you know, Grace having a bad performance at the Open Championship. He finished 72nd. But he pretty much got the bad end of the weather draw every single day because he hit the worst of it. He shot one under on Thursday, but he hit the worst of it on Friday where it was terrible. And then he was out early Saturday and Sunday, and the weather actually ended up getting better as those 2 days went on. So I'm not overly concerned about Grace's poor finish at the British Open. And his recent form outside of that has been pretty good. So I think a lot of people will get scared away from Brandon Grace because of that last performance, but I don't mind him this week, especially in tournaments. Gib, what are your thoughts on some of those guys right there, kind of around Patrick Reed?
I think a lot of people, well, not a lot of people, but I think you're correct in saying that it's sort of going to be distributed evenly around these players. I sort of like Martin Keimer the most. I think people who just solely look at statistics will look at Martin Keimer and think, oh, his stats don't really match. But he's only played in three tournaments that actually have shot link this year. And most of his damage has been on European Tour and on tournaments that don't have shot link. So you don't really have the overall picture for Martin Keimer for the year. So his results have been very solid. And so I think his ownership is going to be pretty low. And that's another place where, you know, you could benefit from.
Yeah. He's a guy that, you know, a lot, because he plays so many events in Europe, a lot of people just don't know that much about him. And his, you know, last year, his form was so up and down. He was so unpredictable. I mean, he would just bomb out and you know, shoot 8 over par and miss a cut. But this year, he's been super consistent. His results, I mean, he hasn't been winning a bunch of tournaments, but he's been playing really well. So I like him as kind of a pivot in there.
His cut was 20 weeks ago.
And that's not, I mean, that's something we would not have ever said about him before.
Yeah. He made it very clear, I think last year or even the year before, he's looking forward to the Olympics. And so he's sort of rounding into form to the tournament in which he's really looking forward to, and that's the Olympics. And so, you know, going
into... Is he looking forward to playing for his country as much as Patrick Reed is?
Probably. I mean, he's... I think I just remember him being the first one to saying, Olympics, I want it, basically. So he changed his – I heard they even changed his golf regimen last year to sort of fit into preparing for the Olympics, and that was last year. And that's probably maybe why he wasn't doing that great. Well, now we look at it, he's had, what, a 6th, a 5th, a 7th, a 5th, 13th, and he's sort of last – 6 or 7, 8 tournaments. A lot of those are of an European tour, but I don't think, you know, he's a bad player, and I think he'll be low-owned.
All right, Brian, what are your thoughts on some of these guys in here?
I think they're all pretty interesting. You know, I could talk about Reed, Grace, Westwood, Keimer. They're all pretty interesting to me, but I like Grace the most out of them. I'm hoping that his ownership is going to be reduced by that 72nd out at Troon. I don't blame him for the result out there. I hear you on the weather. You know, and this course has some Scottish links feel to it. There's a lot of blind tee shots and, you know, a lot of long tee shots. And, you know, the rough is super thick. So he's good at staying out of that kind of stuff and good at dealing with it when he gets into it. I think Reed is interesting. I will have some shares of him. And I'm not sure what to do with Westwood and Keimer yet. I don't want to just like take them all. So I think I might just take my stand at Grace. I think Koepka is a very interesting guy to talk about. He withdrew a few weeks ago because of some ligaments in his ankle. So it was like 4 weeks ago, I believe, which is kind of on that threshold of when ankles can start healing. But he withdrew from Troon also because of that ankle injury. So if he's at 100%, I think he's the play of the week at 7.8K. But what do you guys think about his health?
Have you seen anything, Gib?
I just tried to Google News that there's just Koepka battling injury at PGA trying to secure a Ryder Cup spot. Doesn't really tell you much. And that's just a quick search just while Diva was talking. So I don't know. If you're playing multiple GPP lineups, you might as well have just a little bit of Koepka. And then if you find out he's going to withdraw again, then take him out of your lineup. Set your alarms for 4 a.m. if you're in the West Coast. Just in case he does withdraw last second, like Charlie Hoffman did. But yeah, it's hard to say. I mean, I don't trust him for any cash games, but for GPPs, if he's going to play and if his ankle is sort of feeling better, then he makes a good play.
Yeah, you can make a similar argument for Daniel Berger if he withdrew from the Open Championship as well. And he's a good bit cheaper than Koepka, but you could make a similar argument for both of those guys. Well,
with Berger, it's a shoulder injury, and that's a bit different from an ankle, I think, because, obviously your shoulder is part of the swing, and you can make a case that, well, your ankle is a part of the swing too, but yeah, I'd prefer someone with an ankle injury over a shoulder injury, though.
But, in fairness, Koepka had torn ligaments and Berger just had a strain. So, if you're talking severity of injury, who knows? I mean, there's just so little reporting that we're all speculating.
Pretty much.
Both guys are risk-reward, obviously. Tournament plays only this week. So let's see. There's a lot of guys here between like 7K and 7.5K. We'll just have a free for all here. I'll let you guys throw some names out and then I'll fill in with a few. Gib, who are some of your favorite plays kind of in this bundled range here?
I go from Kaima down. I've got maybe a couple of shots on Furyk Walker. Little bit on Webb Simpson, but the next one down is Charles Schwartzel.
Who's that?
Charles Schwartzel, mate.
Oh.
Hey, I've never said that I don't like Charles Schwartzel. In fact, he's my golden South African boy. And then
so everybody overreacted to the club change.
We all did. But I think I said it on this show is I could just see Charles Schwartzel wins Open Championship. Credits his new clubs for
you and, did,
and so yeah, I like actually the three players priced this price point: Charles Schwartzel, Rafael Cabrera Bello, and Harris English. I like all three of those players.
All right, Brian, who you got for guys in this area?
We skipped over JB Holmes.
Yeah, go ahead. I just kind of mismatched the 87K guys here.
Yeah, he's the only guy that hits it farther than Dustin Johnson.
And his performance in the last two majors.
Yeah, he had a really nice finish out of Troon. His stats look pretty good here. They're nothing great, but with driving distance, I think he has a chance to win. He's 16th in the 200 to 225 range, and pretty strong in all the strokes game stats I'm looking at. So I think JB Holmes is a nice play. I think he might go overlooked with all the noise in his neighborhood. I think Furyk's going to be pretty popular. I think he's a good safe play. I think he presents nice value on, his price being deflated with the first half of this year being plagued by that injury. But I think a bomber's going to win, and Furyk's not a bomber. I think Snedeker at 7.5K is pretty interesting. His odds are at 53-1 to win, which is extremely low for this price tag. And he's really good at par four scoring and is in really good form himself. I think a lot of noise is going to Russell Knox. I'm going to be taking Webb Simpson at the 7.5K range. I like his driving distance. He's sneakily, top 20 across the tour in these strokes gained stats. So that's pretty, you know, surprising when you think Webb Simpson.
Except for putting.
5K, I think that's a great price. And I have to agree with Gibb on Charl at 7.3K. I think he's an excellent play, but I think he's going to be the chalk.
He is. There's no ifs or buts about it. He is going to be the chalk of he might be one of the chalkiest players in this field. He's just
The
chalky McChalk, like number one owned chalky chalk?
No chance. No chance.
I didn't say the top chalk. I said one of the top chalkiest players.
I mean, a lot of people like Cabrera Bayo in this range as well, and there are so many ways to construct a lineup. I mean, we haven't even gotten to the fact that Andy Sullivan is $500 cheaper than John Daly.
That just says that John Daly is overpriced.
John Daly is overpriced, but Andy Sullivan at 6,100 is absolutely ridiculous. The guy's got six straight top 25s, including two majors, and he's $6,100. Like, I don't understand what the DK algorithm has against Andy Sullivan. But, I mean, there's so many ways to skin a cat this week because there are so many names in that 6K range.
How about this? Canadian Open, was that a, you know, open a major championship field there?
No, but it was better than a lot of people thought it was.
Why the hell is Fitzpatrick $1,000 more expensive than he was last week?
Last week's pricing was very strange, and this week, I mean, there's a few outliers this week. It's soft in general, but if you're looking for high owned guys, there's enough around Schwartzel. I mean, I like Snedeker. You guys like Simpson. Cabrera Bayo will be popular. There's plenty of guys in the 6K range. I think Schwartzel will be popular, but
what's the over under on Schwartzel's ownership?
In the Millie Maker?
Three.
Sure, why not? Yeah. I didn't hear what Devo just said.
23.
There you go, Gib. What do you got? I think that's a fair number.
Oh, man, that was a bit higher than I expected. But
he's not super, super chalk because there's going to be guys, some of the high-end guys will be in the 30s. I agree that he'll be...
It'll be very popular.
Yeah.
At that price. But in cash games, he's going to be massive chalk.
I do agree with Devo, by the way, that J.B. Holmes, and let me correct myself, I said his performances in the last two majors, he was caught at the U.S. Open, but third at the British and fourth at the Masters, I believe.
He was fourth at the Memorial, which was one of the other toughest courses of the year as well.
Yeah, so I like Holmes a lot this week as well. All right, other guys, 7.1K-ish and below. Brian, who you got in that vicinity this week?
In the low 7K range?
Yeah, 7.1K or high 6Ks, wherever you want to go there.
Jason Duffner.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like his driving distance, but I do like all the rest of his stats and his form and his price tag. His form's pretty strong, actually. That's sneaky strong. So, and I think he won't be that popular. You know, maybe a little bit more than some other guys in this range, but Duffner's my favorite pick of this litter. I'm also interested in Bill Haas at 7.1K. Pretty good stats ranking as a composite. But those are the only two guys that really kind of interest me there. I want some maybe like Steve Stricker, William McGirt at 7K. But, you know, I'm not too excited about them.
Gabe, who you like in that 7K vicinity there?
7K, Justin Thomas, he's a guy who can hit the ball pretty far. One thing about the distance, though, is Phil Mickelson won this tournament in 2005. He was 75th in driving distance for that tournament. So it's not like, you know, I think he hit a lot of greens in regulation is what actually his second shots were the key. But, you know, Justin Thomas, he's great. Duffner I like a lot too. He's great from tee to green. Usually it's his putter that lets him down. Stricker is getting back to Steve Strickerness. And so, you know, whatever was ailing him, whether it was his brother's illness or just his back injury, but he seems to be getting back into form there. I don't mind McGirt, and I like Grillo. And this is just narrative street. Remember Matt Jones last PGA Championship. Wasn't it his brother who was a PGA sort of professional who was in the field as well?
This doesn't ring any bells to me.
I'm pretty sure it was Matt Jones, and I could be wrong here. Well, Daniel Summerhay's brother or relative is in the field. So
is that Mr. Joe Summerhayes?
Yes. And so Daniel Summerhayes is here. I like Daniel Summerhayes from majors anyway, because, I mean, his strength is putting, but his tee to green is still in the positive as well. And so if...
Probably not after last week.
Well, yeah, maybe not after last week. But still,
he was mega chalk last week. Summerhayes was 40% owned in some contests last week and shot a 78 on Friday.
He burned a lot of people too.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think he's only missed one cut at a major, and that was his first ever major. I think he's, five majors and four made cuts. So I don't hate his game. I think his game is suited well for making cuts at majors. He limits his damage. His damage comes from tee to green, and he can limit that, and his strength is putting. So if he can just find a way to get it on the green, he can sort of get some birdies potentially through his putting, or just at least stay in the game. And that's, you know, if we're hanging on to dear life, that's something in which is good, I think. But, I mean, what do we think the finishing score is going to be at this tournament again?
5 under is what I've heard predicted.
Because when this tournament was a U.S. Open, they were getting 8 unders. And we all know what the USGA likes to do with U.S. Opens and make it impossible for people. So if they're getting 8 under for a U.S. Open, maybe the PGA Championship in 2005 was just a rarity and that it might go sort of up.
If I was a betting person and I saw, you know, decent odds on -5, I would take that the winning score is better under that score, like 6, 7, 8, 9. It wouldn't surprise me. I mean, I think somebody gets there because the course is very long, but it's not really any longer than it was in 05, and guys just hit it farther these days. And, you know, and if the weather holds, obviously it's not supposed to be that windy. I think we'll get somebody. I'm not saying that the scores are going to be super, super good, but I think you'll see somebody that maybe gets it to 7, or 8, or, you know, I don't think you're going to see guys maybe getting into double figures. But, again, conjecture more than anything.
Well, we didn't think that was going to happen for the British Open. And for the most part, no, it did not. It just had two dudes just, yeah, that was just an awesome display.
Some other names in here. If you're into the driving distance aspect, I think Gary Woodland sticks out at 6,700. I already mentioned the fact that Andy Sullivan is way too cheap at 6,100. I think he'll be chalk kind of in that low 6K range. Brian, who else are you kind of liking for sleepers this week?
I agree with you on Gary Woodland. I think he's a great call. I do like his driving distance, and he gains a bunch of strokes. I'm fading Tony Finau, even though he's a bomber. The rest of his stats are too bad, and he typically attracts some more ownership than most. I've got a little bit of interest in Kevin Na just because he's so cheap and his, you know, all his stats besides driving distance are so strong. Probably better cash game play. He typically attracts ownership also. I'm really interested in Daniel Berger at 6.6K. I think him and Koepka make excellent GPP plays this week, you know, on a week where we're focusing even more on contrarianism with the millionaire maker. $33 buy-in, $2.5 million prize pool, and 40% of that is going to first place. Extremely top-heavy. It's very important to be different. So guys like Berger and Koepka that grade out so well statistically for this course, coming with extremely lower ownership due to their injury scares, I think are very cool plays. I'm going to be all over Berger this week.
All right, Gib, who you got for some sleepers?
Been writing about him most of the year, and I was happy to write about him last week, and that's Johnny Vegas. Strokes gained tee to green, 66. That's a positive value. His strokes gained putting is 90th, still a positive value. And he's 5th in greens in regulation this year. So you can find the greens. He's strokes gained around the green. He's not a good scrambler, but you know what? If you're finding greens, you don't need to scramble anymore. And if you can sort of keep with the field and putting, then, you know, that's a pretty decent part of your game there. His distance is 13th, so he is among the super bombers. So his confidence should be soaring high. He's going to be more popular now because he won last week, but you can't discount the fact that his confidence is going to be high. I don't think his ownership's going to jump and skyrocket just because he won the Canadian Open. So he could be a sneaky play, or not necessarily sneaky, but a decent play. Tyrrell Hatton, he came fifth last tournament, so he's obviously a lock to make. I'm just kidding. But I still like him. He came 25th at the PGA Championship last year. Obviously, that has no correlation to this course, but still tells you that he can still... He came fifth at the last major, and he came 25th at the last time at the PGA Championship, which I think was his last major in the US, maybe. I'm just sort of speculating there. I haven't really, you know, dipped further into that. But, you know, Ryan Moore has been sort of average. He's been making the cuts at these majors and the Memorial, US Open and British Open. I think his last three tournaments, all three really hard courses, and he's made the cut in all three of them. So he's going to be very low owned. So, you know, I was debating between him and Andy Sullivan. I ended up opting with Andy Sullivan for my cash game lineup. So those are just a couple of the other players that I was sort of looking at, maybe.
All right. I know Gib has to coach the soccer team on Tuesday night, so we'll let him get out of here. A few other names. Brendan Steele is a bomber if you're kind of into that driving distance angle this week. He's pretty cheap at 6K. Charlie Hoffman could be another one of those low-owned GPP plays. If he was just a little bit ill last week, he can hit the ball a long way as well. And at 6K, I mean, if he's better and ready to go, that's a pretty cheap price for him too. So some potentially boomer bust GPP options there. And with that, we will call it quits for this Tuesday night. Good luck in the PGA Championship contest, everybody. I believe we have the Travelers next week, so we will see you then. Take care, everyone.